Well, from the man who dared suggest that doubt is actually more compatible with faith than certainty, Dr. Daniel Taylor is now working on a new book. Maybe we shouldn't tell everybody that. He now is kind of proposing that everyone has, including Christians, an inner atheist, because all human explanations of reality leak. Folks, this is going to be deep and heavy and very meaningful. On the line with us, one of my favorite and most underrated authors, in my opinion, Dr. Daniel Taylor. How are you, Dan?
I'm doing well.
What the heck were you doing when we called?
I was cleaning my gutters.
He's up on the roof.
The kind of thing a man should be doing.
Yeah, baby. Listen, also joining us in the studio, musician Joel Ogier, our engineer Tim Miller. I wanted to introduce you guys.
Hi, Dr. Taylor.
How you doing, Joe?
Good.
How you doing, Dr. Taylor?
Okay, we first introduced you to our listening audience with this book called The Myth of Certainty, which I still think is an absolutely brilliant read. It's been out for, what, 12 years now, is it?
25.
Shut up. It has not been out that long.
Yeah, you were 10 when it came out.
Yeah, thank you very much. Great read, but the stuff that's stirring in your heart these days is about this inner atheist. Can you concisely put us in the right direction here with this stuff?
Well, it's a term I didn't invent. I got it from Richard Rodriguez, who's a wonderful Mexican-American writer from California. And he argues, and I've sort of picked up on it, that everybody ought to have an inner atheist. And I wouldn't say that everybody necessarily ought to have, but I think many people do. And it is just that part of you, and maybe an important point is it is part of you, that questions and doubts and says, how can you be sure of this? And, you know, asks, rolls his eyes, if you're a he, at certain times. And, you know, for a long time I tried to kill this guy, and I found that just made him stronger. So I've decided instead you need to tell stories to your inner atheist.
All right. Give us an example of how you did this personally, Dr. Taylor. You told a story to your inner atheist?
Well, you know, it basically was a sort of reorienting of my own mindset about what belief was. And for a long time, I had been raised in a tradition that at least implicitly told me that belief was a assent to a certain set of propositions, and that if I said yes to those things, then that made me a believer. And my inner atheist always had hundreds of questions about those things, and every time I gave him an answer, he asked three more questions about my answer. And I found myself sort of in a swirl of, you know, kind of an inner dialogue. And it really, you know, that and reading and life experience started making me think more about what faith really is. And it's more joining the story as a character than it is a person sitting there.
How long have you been, I don't even know what phrase to say, following Christ, been a Jesus guy?
5 years old. If you take the usual definition of the folks I was raised in, which is sort of walking down an aisle or something, then, you know, 5 years old. So that makes 55 years.
55 years. Okay, so how can you be so spiritually immature?
Yeah, you have to work at it.
No, but you know what I mean? There are people out there that are getting... I mean, I get chastised by people all the time because I'm on a Christian radio station, and they are simply not used to somebody saying, I don't know. I'm not even sure if I believe. I have doubts about this, that, and the other thing. And people say, well, buddy, you're not in your Bible enough.
Yeah.
Maybe you're not even a real follower of Christ. You don't sound like a Christian to me.
Well, I take some comfort in that the followers of Christ also went through this. I mean, Peter at one time was walking on the water, and the next minute he was drowning. And something went on in his head between one and the other. And Thomas, of course, is famously said he wasn't going to believe until he could put his hands in the holes.
But they all got to a point where they were super spiritual giants, though.
Well,
I mean,
you know,
we're talking about their troubled periods. They rose up and they conquered.
Right.
Yeah. Well, look at the disciples. They had their ups and their downs, and a lot of their downs followed ups that should have, you know, totally convinced them. I mean, you know, these are the people who are seeing the miracles and who are with the Messiah. And, you know, when things started going south in the Garden of Gethsemane, they didn't know what to do. I mean, I certainly am not trying to say this is the model that everybody should doubt and everybody should question, and like I do or like some people do. If you have what I call certitude, which is a psychological state, then you should have, you know, God bless you. That's probably a gift to you. But you shouldn't kick out the people who don't have that certainty, which is a epistemological state.
Yeah.
And kick them out because they're not, or throw stones at them or shame them, you know, because they don't have this pristine, you know, unalloyed faith.
Yeah, Dr. Taylor, I agree with you entirely in the sense that in my own, this is Joel, by the way.
Yeah, because I wouldn't agree with you entirely.
No, no, you wouldn't. You'd be out of a career.
Yeah, he can't agree with whomever's on the show.
No, exactly. Jump the fence.
Okay.
Well, what I was going to say is I think that an internal investigative dialogue is necessary for growth. You cannot be certain about things. You have to be willing to question everything so as to, in a pursuit of truth, and when you come upon new evidence of a truth, be willing to put down old evidence of a mistruth.
Wow.
And we do this all the time in every other area of our life. We accept the possibility that something might go wrong or something isn't what we think it is. And, you know, when we pick someone to marry or someone to be a friend with or a business to invest money in, we always realize there's some risk and, you know, we've started a journey in this thing. So why, when we come to questions of faith, do we suddenly think, oh, everything has to be nailed down, everything has to be absolutely risk-free, I have to know for certain? I mean, that doesn't seem to be the way God designed it, and so it's not a model that I pursue.
Yeah, for me, it's not so deep. I'm a teacher, and in my classroom, one of my rules is there's no such thing as a stupid question, just stupid people who don't ask them. And
yeah.
I think we've got a lot of stupid people out there who are not asking questions about their faith and just walking around blindly.
Well, you know, I don't mind. I don't want to call those people stupid.
I will.
Yeah.
I'm with Drew on this.
Personally, I wouldn't call them stupid. I mean, they're just...
I'm keeping quiet.
There are more reflective and less reflective people, and a lot of the less reflective people are some of the, you know, most committed, you know, sacrificial people I know. So
but you just
I'm not going to call them names.
You just called them stupid. I mean, they're not very bright if they're less reflective.
No. Reflective and unintelligent are not the same thing. I hate to be defending people that normally are attacking me, but
yeah.
I have to.
Okay, Dr. Taylor, let's talk about the difference between the inner and the outer atheist, like self-generated doubts versus those from the outside.
Well, I'm more amused than anything by the professional atheists who write books, and I mean they're as arrogant and as simplistic in their thinking as the people who write books who say faith is simple and here's the answers to your questions. They don't disturb me or even, you know, cause me to think that much. But, you know, my inner atheist knows me, and knows how to get to me. And so I find that my inner atheist is much more powerful.
You're just too reflective. You're part of that reflective... I saw some people... What is it, Lighthouse Trails Ministries or whatever. They just take the mickey out of people, Christians that are... What do they call it? Reflective theology or some kind of psychobabble Christianity or something. You're too self-reflective. If you got your eyes off yourself, Dr. Taylor, you would, and onto Jesus, you would be more...
Well, what am I reflecting on? I actually am not reflecting on myself. I find that pretty boring. I mean, what's the subtitle of my book, you know, The Reflective Christian and the Risk of Commitment? So I actually am not enamored with people who are professional, lifelong...
Navel gazers?
Yeah, or, you know, sort of, I mean, C.S. Lewis talks about people who have their pet lizard of doubts on their shoulder, and they're always feeding this little lizard and petting it, and those kind of people don't really want answers. I think if you're going to ask questions, you should really be open to the possibility that for some of the questions, there are at least directions to be pointed instead of, I'm so deep, I'm so profound, I'm so wounded, you know. So I say the risk, you know.
You should write country music.
Yeah.
After reflecting, then you commit and you take that chance and you don't wait till all your questions are answered before you make the commitment. So it's a two-part thing for me.
Well, kind of like a response, like a dialogue, like a real relationship. Like any real relationship, as long as I'm in a committed relationship with someone, let's say my wife, if she reveals a new facet of herself to me that I didn't know before, it's not like the relationship dies. Right? It's that I'm enamored with this new portion of the relationship that I didn't know before. So that's what
There's some odd body language going on in the studio here you don't want to know about.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's I think that's just a reflection of real relationship. A real relationship with Christ is one that asks, okay, Jesus, what do I do now? It's not going to be the same thing as I did when I was 5 years old. It's right. going to be a little bit different than I'm going to be when I'm 60 years old. What is it that I'm to be now?
Well, and that's why for me, and I don't even call it a metaphor because I think it's literal, the idea of faith as a story is a much more fruitful, helpful way for me to think about it. I'm a character in this story. I don't know how the story ends exactly. I know I have some, you know, commitments about the overarching end of it, but I don't know how my story is going to play out. But yeah. I'm in this relationship. It's like, you know, being in friendships and, like you say, marriages, et cetera, and you know you're committed to it. You know it's not perfect as far as your participation in it, but this is, you know, this is, this makes sense. So one thing I say is, there's a lot of things I'm not certain about, but one thing I am certain about, at least, or maybe it's certitude, is that this is a worthwhile risk to take, you know, and that I think it's even a reasonable risk. It's not a position you come to after just a pure logical assessment of evidence, but it's reasonable to, after assessing everything, to make this commitment to faith and to Christ.
When are we going to see this book? You, like, get busy, will you?
As soon as the publisher drops a big fat advance in my lap.
Is that why you're fixing
everything.
The roof?
Then I'll quit cleaning the gutters and I'll write this book.
Dr. Daniel Taylor, he's, of course, the author of The Myth of Certainty, a really sharp read. It's still out there. You can still get it, even though it's been around for a couple hundred years.
It's aged.
It is like a fine wine, really.
Exactly.
Yes. Why reasons leak? Can you just pull apart the leaking reasoning scenario?
Well, everything human leaks because we're fallen, and this reasoning thing process leaks, and so, which is something to tell ourselves, and it's something to tell people who hold up, you know, reason as some ultimate guide to life. Why wouldn't it leak? You know, that everything else does, and it leaks. In various ways, it leaks because of false presuppositions, it leaks because of logical flaws, but hugely it leaks because of different ways people assess evidence.
Well, no, so, knowledge is imperfect.
Right, so you get a certain amount of evidence for something, evidence for God, evidence against God. How are you going to assess that? Logic won't solve it, you know, absolutely for you, or even in many cases come close. You know, should I, you know, a woman is pregnant and also needs radiation treatment for cancer. The radiation is going to hurt the child. On the other hand, if she doesn't, you know, she puts her own health at risk. How do you weigh what, you know, what's the right thing here? And some people will weigh it one way.
They could just write another episode of House or something.
Exactly. Well, and, like, you know, that's faith. That's, should we have gone into Iraq? Should we, you know, go to war? Should we do all kinds of things? And if reason could solve all these things, then it would, and reasonable people would run the world. Which is not to say you don't use reason. It is a gift. You use it the best you can, but you don't put a kind of weight on it that it can't bear.
Can you... I'm looking at something that you emailed me here, and I don't know whether you're going to be able to handle this one or not. Asking the lame girl to dance...
Yeah.
First of
all, is there a question there?
forget the gutters. You're going to be the doghouse after that one,
yes.
Right?
Story ethics. What are you talking about? Because we started this thing off telling stories to your inner atheist, and I still don't understand the telling stories part.
Okay. Well, that actually is a reference to a story. I'm glad you're giving me a chance to plug another one of my books.
Thank you very much.
Called Letters to My Children, and I tell the story of when I was 12 years old.
And you were in 12th grade, because you're just so sharp.
I was so sharp.
He's a doctor.
There was a girl in my, you know, class who had polio, and her, you know, for whatever reason.
How,
you know,
old are you?
People didn't ask her to dance.
And, polio.
Yeah, polio existed when I was a kid.
Wow.
And so this assistant teacher said, you know, you should ask this girl to dance. And, you know, I tell that whole story in Letters to My Children. But the point is that that's become kind of a master story for me. And that's another one of my pet concepts, is that people have master stories that explain the world to them. Huh. And that one, you know, which I didn't think about for 25 years, when I thought about it as an adult, and was trying to answer a question that my kid was asking, I realized that that was a formative experience for me. So this notion of, you know, faith as story or telling stories to my inner atheist is that stories affect us as whole persons, not just our minds, but our emotions, our will, you know, our desiring, even physically. Mm-hmm. And that's one reason that story is, I think, a better approach to faith than pure reason, because we are not just reasoning beings, and some of us don't reason much at all, and story affects us all. So my inner atheist quiets down, doesn't go to sleep, but quiets down when stories are being told, because it's addressing more than just the things that my inner atheist objects to. So, you know, I'm given the stories of the Gospels, and I find them powerful. I find them moving, you know, or the stories of faith through church history. And they sort of motivate me. They attract me in a way that just a pure assertion, God is love, doesn't attract me. But you tell me a story that plays out that idea that God is love, and I'm willing to lower my bar of proof, you might say. I don't require an absolute certainty.
You're digging on
that story.
I'm looking at Joel, and you're digging this because you're a songwriter.
Yeah, I write stories.
Yeah.
You know, I'm fascinated by the notion that throughout the Bible, the big lessons were often taught as narrative. You know,
right?
And I just think that it's easier for all levels of kind of intellect to apply a story to one's life.
In other words, stupid people can get it.
Well,
everybody gets it because we're wired for stories.
Exactly.
And it's not connected to intelligence. I mean, one of the things I argue in this book that I'm not writing while I'm cleaning out the gutters is that propositions are important, but propositions should never get very far away from the stories out of which those propositions grow.
Mm.
So we, you know, I want to hold on to the proposition that God is love and a number of assertions and the Ten Commandments. But where did they come from? How do we know that? You know, we know God is love because he rescued people of Israel out of Egypt, and that's what they're reminded of, is that story over and over again. The Ten Commandments are all rooted in the situation that Israel was in, surrounded by pagan nations having to live together. They needed these particular ten. There's certainly a lot more than Ten Commandments in the Old Testament or in the Bible as a whole. So it's not, I take stories and I don't have to pay attention to propositions. But they test each other and they provide necessary limits on each other.
Great evidence of that is modern contemporary worship songs by some of the greatest writers in the world. They will make a statement like, our God saves, or you know, and then they expound on that statement through a storyline.
Right.
So the verses will, you know, the chorus will be the proposition, and the rest of the verses will be, you know, the story of how that is true.
Exactly. And those songs always appeal as well to our emotions.
Yeah.
Not to make them emotional or sentimental, but because that's also part of who we are. And we can't deny that any more than we deny our minds or anything else.
Sure.
Dr. Daniel Taylor, may I just read this central assertion in this latest book that we need to be looking forward to? Skepticism, often portrayed as the enemy of religious faith, is as compatible with a life of faith as any other stance, as long as it does not exclude itself from its skeptical questioning.
Yeah, I have nothing. I have no problem with skepticism as long as it's also skeptical of skepticism.
Nice. Well said.
In other words, just ask, all right, I also doubt my doubts.
Yeah.
You know, I doubt that my doubts, for instance, should have the final vote. I doubt that they should, determine everything. They should have their say. And so, you know, I let my inner atheist have his say, because if I don't, he gets stronger. If I try to suppress him, you know, kill him, silence him, you know,
ignore him,
or discipline my way away from him, or even fast and pray my way, you know, try to pay him into extinction, ironically, it makes him stronger.
Yeah.
But if I say, all right, have your say, what's, you know, do your worst here.
In other words, everything in moderation, including moderation.
Yeah, I suppose. And then, I say, it's not that I ignore what that part of me says. I said, all right, that's a point of view, but I've got all this other stuff going too, and these stories. And, you know, so far in my life, I've found the stories more powerful than the doubts. Mm.
All human explanations of reality leak because human reasoning leaks. Faith is best presented in a skeptical age such as ours, not as a set of assertions to be proven or falsified, but as a story to be lived. Both the rational... Oh, sorry, I heard a deep inhale there. Yeah. What were we going to say?
Well, I think that in our, you know, age more than any, that this story approaches the way that rings bells with people.
Man, we should go hang out and have coffee sometime.
We're raised to be skeptical about all kinds of logical assertions.
Both the rationalistic apologists for faith and its rationalistic deniers are, for the skeptic, blowing smoke. There is another ancient and postmodern way, the way of stories. Again, just so we paint this picture before we say goodbye to you, give us one of your stories that has spoken to your inner atheist.
Well, you know, they come in all, you know, all categories.
You said earlier you said some phrase like the master story or something like that.
Yeah, master stories are. I mean, our lives are made up of all kinds of stories, but master stories are a handful of stories that explain the world to us, tell us how to live, what to do when we have choices to make, and to which we return when we're in pain or in trouble. And of course, the master story for me is the story of faith. That's the one I've made my major commitment to.
Right.
But within that, there are like stories of asking this lame girl to dance, or, you know, relationships in my life. But there are also stories from other writers, from songs, from, you know, that all help me when I need to do something more than just pass the time. So stories aren't there to kill time. You know, stories are there to redeem the time. They're there to enrich the time, give it meaning.
I wish you had a website I could promote, but you don't. So it's Dr. Daniel Taylor, the author of The Myth of Certainty, and you need to keep your ear to the ground for the next release. Soon to be coming out, something like The Skeptical Believer, telling stories to your inner atheist. Now you know why I like this guy so much.
Yeah.
Joel said earlier, we need to get you up here just for the pure fact of maybe going out for a time of healing with Dr. Guinness or something like that.
Well, we can talk about that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. And Nurse Wings.
Yes. Dan, thanks, man. I always appreciate chatting with you.
Well, I'm always glad to hear the invitation from you.
Thanks, mate. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, bye-bye.
Dr. Daniel Taylor, a really neat guy. A really neat guy. I don't say that very often, but he's just a really neat guy. Okay, we've got one more talkback subject for you, folks. And I don't think we're going to get many calls in this. So we're going to throw it out to you just real quick and see what your response is. Here's a scenario. There is a growing trend amongst Jesus people. Many seem to be attending multiple churches over the course of a year, whether it's to get a better understanding of the wider body of Christ, or it's to experience different preachers or different worship styles. More and more churchgoers are foregoing church membership at one place, long-term commitment at one place. Do you see anything wrong with this? Is that a bad thing? What do you think, folks? 905-338-1250. We'll be right back. Faith is the key.